From beautiful downtown Sacramento, it's time for Beach Blanket Fort Bingo!
Beach Blanket Fort Bingo! Beach Blanket, Beach Blanket Fort Bingo, Fort Bingo. Spaz's got a show and you really want to know what's going on. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Beach Blanket, Beach Blanket Fort Bingo, Fort Bingo. Our music goes to you and your favorite comics too. Grab a spot and settle in, cause it's high time we begin. Beach Blanket Fort Bingo.
Hey everybody, this is Stephen Spashny, and you have tuned into Beach Blanket Fort Bingo. I appreciate you stopping by. Got a special show for you here, an interview with Reg Mombasa and Peter O'Doherty of Dog Trumpet. They have a brand new album called Great South Road that is absolutely fantastic. Some of you may know Reg and Pete from their stint with Mental as Anything that lasted 22 years. Lots of great music in these guys' back catalog. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation with two of Australia's finest singer-songwriters and artists right here on Beach Blanket Fort Bingo!
Beach Blanket Fort Bingo,
yeah, yeah.
Beach Blanket Fort Bingo,
yeah, yeah.
Beach Blanket Fort Bingo Podcast.
Brothers Reg Mombasa and Peter O'Doherty originally gained their rock and roll stripes as members of Australian band Mental as Anything. Formed in 1976, the Mentals were a unique quintet, one of the only bands during the new wave era to feature four talented singer-songwriters. The band achieved enormous success down under in the late 70s and early 80s before achieving international success in the mid-80s. By the beginning of the 90s, Mental as Anything took a sabbatical, with Reg and Pete going off to form their own musical project, Dog Trumpet. Releasing their debut album in 1991, the duo created a sound that was different from their main band, yet still comforting and familiar. When the Mentals reconvened in the mid-90s, Reg and Peter were busier than ever, recording and performing with both bands while also maintaining their careers as artists. By the year 2000, Reg and Peter decided to leave Mental as Anything and focus on Dog Trumpet and their careers in the art world. Every few years, they'd release a Dog Trumpet album, all of which remain some of the most unique and engaging pop and rock albums of our generation. In 2020, they released their seventh album, Great South Road, which is their finest full-length album to date. Filled with imaginative songwriting and warm production, the album will certainly appeal to Mentals and Dog Trumpet fans, as well as lovers of pop, rock, folk, and Australianicana, which is kind of like Americana, only Australian. Okay, maybe I should work on that joke. While the world outside was on lockdown because of COVID-19, I was able to chat with Reg and Peter about their new album and much more. While I was originally going to address the deaths of Dog Trumpet drummer Ian Shedden and Mental as Anything frontman Greedy Smith, I chose not to at the last minute. While the world is swimming in fear, I decided to focus on the more joyful aspects of their lives and career. However, this episode of Beach Blanket Fort Bingo is dedicated to the memory of Greedy and Ian, true talents who live on in Reg and Peter's music. I hope you enjoy the highlights of my chat with Dog Trumpet. Welcome to the Blanket Fort, Reg Mombasa and Peter O'Doherty. Things first, why don't you introduce yourselves so the listeners know your voice? We'll start with you, Peter.
Hi, I'm Peter O'Doherty from Dog Trumpet, previously Mental as Anything, but for the purposes of this particular interview, I think it's Dog Trumpet.
And I'm Reg Mombasa from Dog Trumpet, previously of Mental as Anything, but for the purpose of this interview, Dog Trumpet.
Before we focus on the new album, let's just go way back to the beginning. Now, do each of you remember the exact moment that you decided that you wanted to become a musician?
I just started playing acoustic guitar when I was about 15, and my cousin showed me a few chords. And then, you know, I remember playing things like As Tears Go by the Rolling Stones with them, because we could sort of manage to play it. And I mean, I didn't at that time think I was going to be a musician. I probably thought I was going to be an artist then, but obviously things changed as I got older.
Yeah. I think it's around the time that you're very early, in your early teens, when I think there's a little trigger goes off if you're in that kind of inclined that way. And I think I definitely had some trigger go off. I went with, Reg took me as I was about 12 or 13. I went to see Deep Purple, Free and Manfred Mann, who did a great big tour together in 1971 through Australia. And that was one of the first, well, probably really big shows I ever seen. And it just sort of, that blew my mind. So from then on, I think I was thinking about music a lot, and I started playing guitar at that stage. And I remember being about 11 and having a transistor radio and listening to the top 40 in bed, you know, at night. So I was listening to, the music thing had obviously crept in there, and I was really interested in that whole field.
When you were first starting out, were you learning the instruments together, or was there sort of that sibling rivalry thing that sort of inspired you as individuals, and you were just sort of striving to maybe even impress each other?
Well, actually, I'm six and a half years older than Peter, so when I started playing, you know, when I was 15, Peter was only, you know, 8 or 9, so he wasn't really playing then. He didn't start playing until he was...
I was still playing with Matchbox Cars.
And then later on, we jammed a bit together when Peter was, you know, started playing a bit.
Yeah, I think Reg helped choose a Christmas present for me in, probably would have been about 1971, and it was a little cheap Chinese-made K-pop, guitar, acoustic guitar, and that I loved it. I loved that K-pop, and it actually made it through for a good couple of decades before it just fell to pieces. But I even used it on a couple of Mentals recordings, so it was a beautiful little one of those little three-quarter size, you know, that just little cheap thing that was rolled out of some Chinese factory by the tens of thousands, and it was a beautiful sounding guitar. It was one of the nicest guitars I've ever had. It's often the way, you know, some of the cheapest things could be the nicest things, but yeah, that's what got me going. And Rich showed me a few chords, and that was it, really. Just, you know, yeah, he buggered me up.
Reg was already in Mental as Anything, but Peter, you kind of joined by accident. Wasn't it only supposed to be a temporary thing?
Pete used to come and jam with us a bit, just on guitar, when we did our first few gigs. And then our original bass player, Steve, he was getting a bit interested in jazz, and he wasn't turning up for rehearsal. So we asked Peter to start playing bass. So Peter actually did pretty much join solidly once we asked him to be a bass player.
I mean, I did fill in, and the fill-in just kept on going. Steve never came back. You know, we were expecting him to come back from holidays and want his bass seat back, but I stayed on for another 22 years, nervously thinking, when's he coming back?
In 1990, the Mentals took a short sabbatical and you formed Dog Trumpet. Where does the band name come from?
Yeah, it was an image I did for Mambo, and because it had, you know, had the name and the image of the weird sort of cross between a trumpet and a dog and a jet engine kind of thing, we thought, oh, well, that'll do for a name, and we sort of just went along with that.
We had some other stupid names which we didn't go with. I can't remember too many of them. I just remember Shirt World was one of them, and, you know, that didn't make it, so...
Shirt World, yeah, that's not bad. Shirt World.
You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that, yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You're mine. Honey, you're lucky to have me. I'm so handsome. The night is young, you look good, I feel fine. Oh my, I'm gonna press my flesh against your dress tonight. All right. Yes, that's right.
The first Dog Trumpet album, Two Heads, One Brain, was released in 1991. Were those newly composed songs, or were those kind of left over from, you know, they never made it onto Mental's albums?
Some of them, a couple of them we had demoed with the Mentals, but most of them were fairly new, I think, at the time.
Just about all of it. I think I'm So Handsome was the only one we'd actually had a go at recording with the Mentals. And
we did.
It was very different from the version that we did with Dog Trumpet. It was way off from the original demo that Reg had done on his little four-track recorder at home. And he was disappointed with it, and so was I. And I mean, the Mentals was a funny thing because it was four different songwriters, and you know, it sprawled over, you know, 20 odd years of recordings. So some of them, you know, you feel really good about, and other ones were really hit and miss, and some of it, you know, I didn't like too much at all. And that was one that actually didn't make it onto an album for good reason, because it just wasn't quite right. You know, it was even, I think it was even possibly orchestrated. It had some strings in there. It was just wrong, you know. So doing Dog Trumpet was definitely an outlet for some of the, or a lot of the songwriting that we've been doing, which just didn't have room to go on any Mentals albums with four songwriters. You know, you could only squeeze a handful of songs on a record with the Mentals. So, yeah, no, we thought we were talking about it for quite a long time, and then Greedy, who was in the Mentals, had an accident, fell off a horse and smashed his arm up and broke his elbow really badly. So he was out of action quite a bit of time, and we took a bit of time off the road, and that's when we sort of jumped into the Dog Trumpet project with that batch of songs that became the first album.
By the year 2000, you had left the Mentals, and Dog Trumpet became your main musical outlet. Was it a scary prospect to leave the mothership and do some musical exploration on your own?
We'd been doing Dog Trumpet for 10 years, you know, alongside Mental Eventing, so we sort of knew what it was like. And plus, we both had our kind of day jobs as artists too to do as well, so it wasn't like we were relying on Dog Trumpet as our only source of income kind of thing.
That was easy. The hard part was the actual telling the others that we were going to leave, and that was a hard thing, because it was a bit like telling your family that you're not going to turn up for the Christmas lunches anymore, you know. So, they were all quite shocked, I think, because it was just that we'd had the same five of us in place for 22 years, and it just seemed like this, you know, this kind of sort of thing that was set in stone. And, you know, I announced that I was going to leave. I think, well, you did too, Reg, at the same time. We both laid it on there.
Yeah. Martin almost fell off his chair, he said, unfortunately, at the time, when we announced it.
But look, they kept on going. We left, and they filled our spots with other people, and then some of those people got replaced over the time. It's funny, because it was like sort of the glue or the stitching in a child's toy that as soon as you take the stitching out from one part and the arm comes off, then the other arm came off, and then they were, they were constantly changing arms after that.
And down in my mind, I feel a bit sad for all of the things that we've never done. Did she say hold me? Did she say hold me? Did she say hold me?
Now it's 2020, and you've been members of Dog Trumpet longer than you were in Mentals anything. How long did it take before you felt that you were sort of no longer living under the Mental shadow? I mean, apart from idiotic music journalists like me bringing them up.
It is a bit like, you know, leaving a family. And I sort of, you realize, you know, when we'd go back and have events with the Mentals, you know, we'd go to have Christmas drinks or something, and you'd realize that they were still, you know, still talking about and still, you know, totally, you know, obsessed with the Mentals. That was their thing, and so it was difficult at first, you know, and it was odd seeing them playing with other people, you know, playing our songs, you know, with other people doing it. It was a bit jarring at first, but we soon got used to it.
Well, I didn't really see them much after that. I didn't really want to, because it did feel uncomfortable, you know, a bit like witnessing, I don't know, somebody replacing you and the family. So, you know, it was a funny thing, the Mentals. It was, because something that I mean, for instance, I joined at the age of 19, so it was my whole sort of young adult life was wrapped up in that. So, it was just odd after we left, because they continued, and in some ways, you know, it would have been probably healthy for them to completely stop for a while and and then maybe rejig as something else or reform as a sort of a branch of what the Mentals had been. But anyway, that was just we moved on, but still, I think, a pretty good legacy of music there from those days.
Gravity makers all fall down, bang, bang on the ground. Keep us in a state of fear of falling. Keep us in a state of fear of falling. Whoa.
This brand new album, Great South Road, that's just come out. It's hard to believe that it's been 7 years since your last album, Medicated Spirits. When you decided to start recording this album, did you start with a new batch of songs, or were any of these left over maybe from past albums and you were just finally able to finish them?
Yeah, I think we usually have a few left over and hangers-oners and a few sort of demos from the last album or two, and then we have good intentions that we'll continue working with those songs. But once you start getting into a new phase of songwriting, you tend to go with the freshest sort of material, I suppose. That's what tends to happen.
What inspired this collection of songs? Is there some sort of theme that runs through the album? I mean, you did have a song called Great South Road on the album River of Flowers.
Great South Road was the main road between Auckland and Wellington, and it actually runs right through down the length of New Zealand. And we lived, on or nearby that road when we were children, so... So the song Great South Road was kind of about that, but then the title for this album was partly a reference to our childhood, but also a kind of a metaphor for the fact that the human race is heading south, going into difficult territory, descending into hell, perhaps. Hopefully not, but looks a bit that way, doesn't it?
I suppose it does, really. I mean, I also thought we were just trying to reverse that strategy that Led Zeppelin had when they released Houses of the Holy and then put the song called Houses of the Holy on an album later on. I thought that was always a sort of interesting move. So
yeah, we're just trying to confuse
people. we wanted to get in on the action.
Do you approach songwriting and recording differently with each album, or are you comfortable with the creative process that you've developed over the years?
We're pretty much comfortable with the way we write songs completely separately, and then we get together and, work out parts or, arrangement ideas to them. But we've always pretty much written our songs separately, and then we get together to, rehearse them and record them. And Peter always does the production and the engineering. So we've kept with that pretty much that approach.
Pretty much a homespun approach. We never go into really only the first Dog Trumpet album did we venture out of the house and go into a proper studio. So we've avoided that since, I mean, partly because it's expensive going into studios. And from all the years of doing the Mentals recordings and studios and watching the clock and coming out thinking you've done okay and it's going to sound good, the next day you sort of put the cassette on of what you've been working on, you think, well, that sounds pretty useless. So I was constantly sort of being, semi-disappointed by the recordings or by what we ended up with. So by doing it at home, it just means you can spend as much time tinkering. And of course, the technology is great now. You can do it all very easily without having to pay, engineers and producers and record companies and recording studios. There's the endless way of funneling out your shekels if you do it that way. So this is, and also it just means we can control the art side of it and be, it may not always sound as big and flash and expensive sounding, which I don't care anyway. I don't really like that sort of sound that much. I prefer something that sounds a bit more idiosyncratic, I suppose. But that's the thing about doing it at home. You can spend as much time at least getting interesting performances or ones that you're a bit more pleased with. Even then, sometimes I put the albums out and think, oh, could have done that better. Could have, that song doesn't sound right, or that's too slow, or blah blah blah.
3 o'clock in the morning, open up the door to the solitude of cars and cranes and crowded streets and stores. I'm trying not to worry. Most things will never happen. I'm sorry. but you've heard it all before.
You both approach songwriting from different musical perspectives, but you meet somewhere in the middle on the albums. I mean, do you offer suggestions to each other? Do you give each other proper input, or does that just cause too much stress?
After we come together with a song, we'll make suggestions about, you know, maybe an arrangement thing, you know, shorten this or lengthen this, or you know, you'll have a part that you'll come up with that adds to the song. So, there is some interaction, definitely.
And also, the thing with time not being part of the pressure of releasing something at any, you know, there's no deadlines involved. So we can try different versions of things, and then we can record them if we're not happy with that. We do various versions of some of the songs, and some of them come up quickly and some of them take a lot more effort. So yeah, it's good, you know, we can spend that 7 years and do all that stuff around the kitchen table and going back and forth between that and the recording studio, which is the studio being the third bedroom in my house.
You released two of the tracks, Stay for Too Long and Overseas and Elsewhere, 3 years ago. Was that the beginning of the sessions that gave birth to Great South Road?
We recorded a batch of songs, and those two were the strongest that ended up being finished mixes at the time. Both became a little bit reworked, not a lot, but just a little bit of remixing more between the 3 year ago version and what goes on the album in 2020. So yeah,
part of the delay was to do with, you know, technical things. But Peter changed his operating system, and he also had a hip replacement and a broken shoulder, which slowed things up a little bit.
When choosing the songs that'll be released as key tracks or singles or videos, whatever you want to call them nowadays, do you usually have a hand in that, or do you leave that to somebody else?
No, there is no one else. It's just us, unfortunately.
It's mainly us. Our manager, John O'Rourke, he sometimes makes, you know, suggestions about this and that, but it's pretty much the two of us.
Try not to do your best.
Album is nowhere near overproduced. There are still so many layers to the songs on the album. Like, for example, Wallpaper has this wonderful melodic melody. Well, I guess all melodies are melodic. But it's suddenly lifted to a new level once that recurring guitar riff hooks you in. Now, Peter, when you were writing that song, did that guitar hook exist in your head, or was that something you guys created in the studio while working on the song?
No, that I just wrote it around the acoustic guitar, just the sort of started off as a sort of 6/4 kind of feel, which was an odd one, but you know, it's actually very simple, just two chords through that sort of verse part, the 6/4 part. But no, Reg came up with the parts. We tried, I mean, I think we just probably tried several parts on the electric guitar, and it was, you know, it just, you came up with a really nice little riff, and then the sort of the kind of repetitive little feel that goes all the way through. There's about a mix of three electric guitars doing their thing in there, which creates that kind of nice, the sort of hypnotic sound, slightly psychedelic to the sound.
Yeah, it's a sort of a droning thing where you've got the, I don't think, the G string droning against the other string doing the tune, and it's a little bit psychedelic, you know, so that's kind of stuff we like.
Yeah, no, we love all that stuff, so, you know.
Now, Reg, there's an interesting story behind Lonely Death Cleaning Company. Can you fill the listeners in? I mean, I know you've probably repeated it ad nauseum, but this may be the first time that our listeners actually hear the story.
I read this article in the paper, you know, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago about a man that had died in Japan, and it said there's a company called the Lonely Death Cleaning Company that cleans up after people have a lonely death, no one knows that they've died, so their body decomposes, and so it's, you know, it's a, it, you have to get the hazmat crew in, the specialist cleaners in to clean up. And I just thought that was interesting. I mean, it's sad. I mean, it's a sad fact of, you know, human life that many people are very lonely and they don't have family or friends that really know anything about them. So when they live alone and they die, no one knows. I mean, that's a pretty terrible thing. So it was kind of about that, you know. It was really, I wrote it quite quickly, which is unusual for me. I often take a while to finish things, but that one, it kind of came out very quickly.
Eleanor Rigby probably had a slightly better life than me. At least she owned a home and she went to church. That would provide some company. The Lonely Death Cleaning Company came along to clean up the mess. Left in my tiny flat after my lonely death.
For each of you, is there a song that you feel more connected with than the others on the album? And we'll start with you, Peter.
Not really. I mean, each song just exists on its own. It's own little universe when you're writing it. And if it makes it to the final album, it was kind of, we had a few extra songs for this album, but we tried to keep it as consistent as possible, and so it had a kind of a some sort of flow to it. But I think Heard It All Before is a favorite, and Wallpaper is for me of my ones. But then, you know, each song, I really enjoy the process of recording it. It's one of the best parts of being a musician, really, is just the actual, you know, the writing and then the actual recording and seeing what comes out of that process and seeing what happens. And for instance, the last song we had, we added that trumpet as a sort of almost a last minute idea. We hired the trumpet player in to do some play on one of the other songs, Gangrene. Actually, we had the idea of having like a flugelhorn, but then didn't quite work out what he'd played. So I just said at the end of spending a few hours doing that, I wasn't too sure about it. I said, oh, you mind just maybe whack a bit of trumpet on the end of this other song I've got, which was just Alden E at the end. It's like an outro on the one chord. So I just sort of did about three tracks really quickly in about 15 minutes, and that was it. And that ended up being the last thing you hear on the record is the trumpet, which is beautiful.
And Reg, what about you? Is there anything you feel more connected to on the album?
Probably not hugely, but maybe Overseas and Elsewhere, because I'm scolding myself in the song about, you know, worrying about too much about small things when there are plenty of big things to worry about. But, you know, I mean, that's not necessarily my favourite song, but of mine, I'm not sure. I probably quite like Cleaning Company for some reason, and maybe Walk to the Moon, maybe.
We were sort of going for each song having its own sound, which, I mean, it all sounds like it's, I think, from the same place and the same idea and sonic sort of ethos at work. But each song, you know, we were really going, especially with the mixing, just to get every one of those songs sounding in at its sort of individual kind of peak, if you know what I mean.
Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, goes the tick tock, tick tock, ticking of the clock.
I always listen in the headphones, so that's why I'm feeling that warmth and that humanity and that honesty in the music. Even if you're not singing about something that's directly from your life, there's such an honesty to the music you guys create.
Yeah, I think most things, and the songs don't have to be directly from your life. I think that's what probably the same for most songwriters. I mean, there's a combination of writing directly from experience and then a lot from an amalgam of different experiences and things you see and witness or you know, just experiences of other people that you know, and things that can creep in. I mean, for instance, the song Wallpaper started from just having been looking at the poetry of Philip Larkin, a English poet who did some terrific poetry in the sort of through the 50s and 60s and 70s. But he was a bit like Ray Davies, you know, sort of had this kind of downcast, bleak, melancholic consistency to his poetry, but really entertaining and really funny at the same time.
Stay for too long. Stay for too long. It's just a feeling that I sometimes have. There's nothing on the radio. Nothing on the TV. Nothing in the garden.
Well, the music industry is a very different beast than it was back in the Mentals days, and it's even very different than it was when Medicated Spirits came out. Since you basically operate on your own these days, do the changes that are happening in the business ever affect the way that you approach a new Dog Trumpet release?
Not really. It doesn't affect what we do, and it obviously affects how you get the music out into the world and stuff like that. I mean, I'm not particularly good at social media and all that kind of stuff, but we do use it as clumsily as we can possibly can.
Funnily enough, even though we've been doing, you know, being in the music industry for, want of a better term, for all these decades, I never really felt that too comfortable with that side of it anyway. It was always the music. It was really that the only reason that we were doing it was for the joy of the music and the fun of it and the creativity of it. But the business side is always a little bit a bit above my head, isn't it? It always seemed too difficult and too much like different set of people who are operating in that kind of terrain. So, you know, I think now it's so different, you know, and then even things like CDs are now almost extinct, but we're still producing CDs because I still like the idea of having something in your hand, and obviously vinyl's still alive, and that's fantastic, you know, having something as and you can mull over and look at all the credits and the pictures and just, you know, go back to like a book. But apart from the music industry, it almost doesn't matter to us anymore. We're doing it because we want to do it, we love to do it, and we can do it. So we're kind of still at it.
Well, it seems like Great South Road is going to be your first official release in the U.S. Are you pleased with that news?
Yes, we are, yeah.
Are we pleased?
That's great.
We are, Steven. Yeah. Very pleased. No, that's great. We'd love to come and tour over there, but it's not looking very feasible at the moment for anybody.
Well, it makes you wonder why you worry about every little thing. It makes you want to say you're sorry, I won't do that again. Overseas and elsewhere, there's trouble on the rise. The sun may not be shining on someone else's life today.
Even though you departed Mentals Anything 2 decades ago, were you still sharing music with them? Were you sending them Dog Trumpet stuff, or did you just make them go to the store and get it?
No. We still, you know, we were still talking to them all. I mean, obviously there was a bit of a problem with the Mentals because they fell out with Dave Tuohill, the drummer. So Dave and Martin and Greedy weren't talking, but Peter and I were still, you know, we're still in communication with both sets of them. So we knew what they were doing, and they knew what we were doing, and we were following each other's careers still.
Time to remember one day, to forget, to be low, to be high.
How can listeners keep updated on all things Dog Trumpet?
We've got a website, we've got a Facebook, and I think we've got someone's operating an Instagram, which I don't have, so I don't know much about that part of it. But yeah, we're trying to use the technology that's available. So And at the moment, with this whole COVID-19 thing, it seems like it's, you know, everyone's in the same boat. So it's a good thing to be able to do things like live stream performances on Facebook, which we're about to do one. So in a way, it just changes things having a situation like this, which has taken over the whole world. You know, so we don't know how long it's going to be so sort of set in place. The way internet travel now is just something that no one's thinking about. So we've just been staying home and looking at using, you know, the streaming services and whatever.
Yeah, we're slowly and reluctantly coming into the 21st century.
That's it for this episode of Beach Blanketfort Bingo. I'd like to thank my special guests, Peter O'Doherty and Reg Mombasa of Dog Trumpet, for stopping by to chat about their brand new album, Great South Road, available now. I'd also like to thank John O'Rourke. And I'd like to thank you, the listener, for hanging out and for supporting Beach Blanketfort Bingo. Remember to like, comment, share, subscribe, and keep Beach Blanketfort Bingo alive.